From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. December is a festive time of year. Many of us go to holiday parties, and something that tends to happen at holiday parties, especially the ones meant for adults, is drinking. But what do you do if you're trying to avoid drinking at the holidays? More than one in four people at some point in their life will be affected by alcoholism, or alcohol use disorder, as the modern phraseology would have it. That's frequent or heavy alcohol drinking that gets difficult to control and often creates issues at work or school and with family and friends. Alcoholism can be quite stigmatizing, but so also can be the choice not to drink. We asked our texting group about this. Peter in Rockford said, "As an alcoholic, I find myself avoiding these events where alcohol will be a large part of the experience. I'm a long time sober, but the danger is ever present." And we also heard from Bob in Bloomington, who said, "When my brother-in-law said he was bringing the requisite whiskey sours for noon on Christmas Day, my heart fell. I quit drinking last January and joined a 12-step program. This was one of the strongest reactions I've had in the year since I quit. And it's not even happened yet. I hope my toolkit is full enough to help me through the day, and I think it is." Bob and Peter, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. Let me ask you, how do you recognize when to get help or when someone needs help with alcoholism? And how can you be supportive of people who are trying to be sober in and outside of holiday parties? If you want to join our conversation today, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. With us to talk about all of this is Dr. Smita Das. She's chair of the American Psychiatric Association's Council on Addiction Psychiatry. She practices and is on the faculty at Stanford Healthcare in California. I also have to note she completed her MD PhD from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Dr. Das, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me here and also for shedding light on such an important topic today.
Also with us, Jeremy Klemanski. He's president and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, which runs drug and alcohol treatment centers across Illinois. Jeremy, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me with you today.
All right. I want to begin. I think it's pretty well understood why people drink, though there are obviously a lot of different reasons. But I thought maybe we could start with talking about the many reasons people have for not drinking. And Jeremy, I'll begin with you on that.
So, of course, obvious are, you know, people who are trying to reduce their substance use or are in active recovery. Those are, I think, one of the most obvious things. But there are some other things that are not always obvious for folks. For example, people who are experiencing a pregnancy, people who are experiencing other medical conditions. You know, we know that increased alcohol consumption can exacerbate, for example, the growth of certain cancers. I mean, we've been learning a lot of things in recent years about the effects of alcohol on the body. So there's a whole host of, you know, physiological reasons as well as social reasons that people might choose not to include alcohol in their holiday festivities.
Dr. Das, there's a social aspect of drinking as well. Sometimes there's even pressure to drink, like at holiday parties. How do people see that manifest?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There is a social pressure. There is a pressure in holiday parties. In my clinics over the last couple of weeks, I've been talking a lot about this with patients who are in recovery and nervous about this. In addition to feeling like they need to be part of the festivities at various functions, there's also an added layer of stress and emotions that comes with the holidays for many people. This might involve seeing family they haven't seen in a long time or being in situations where they need to be social, but they're not used to being social. And so that's where alcohol can make the picture even more complex.
Jeremy, I want to share another message we got from our listeners. This is from Sarah in Rockford, Illinois, who says, "My husband and I have extensive alcoholism in our extended family, aunts, uncles, siblings. We have made a conscious decision to be an alcohol-free family. We often get made fun of as the vanilla couple, but we choose not to go down the same destructive path. It's ripped kids apart from parents, burdened the grandparents to pick up the pieces, and ruined careers. We refuse to be like that." Thank you, Sarah, for sharing that. Jeremy, she mentioned being called the vanilla couple. How prevalent is the stigma around not drinking?
Well, it's not uncommon for people to notice if you're behaving in a way that's outside the norm in any type of social gathering or group. There are different terms people use, for that, and it can be stigmatizing. But I think it's great, in the case that the listener shared, they had a strategy. She has a partner in this, right? There's a lot of things that people can do to kind of insulate themselves from that sometimes negative peer pressure. And having a plan, having a partner who understands why you're doing what you're doing, and then you deciding, are you going to communicate with others your reasons for your choice, or are those yours? And you don't necessarily owe anyone an explanation. I think those are all great, great strategies.
Dr. Das, how do you tell the difference between someone who's just drinking every now and then and someone who's really becoming addicted to alcohol?
That's a great question. So when somebody's using a substance, and this can be with alcohol or any other substance, there can be use. There can be use that puts somebody in a dangerous position or might be risky, which we generally will call misuse these days. And then there can be what you described earlier in the show, which was an addiction or a substance use disorder is the phraseology, as you mentioned. A substance use disorder occurs not based on, say, how much somebody is using or when they're using, but really how much that use is impacting their life. Are they meeting the criteria in the DSM or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is put out by the American Psychiatric Association? This is essentially our guide to diagnose things, mental health, from depression, anxiety to substance use disorders. And for substance use disorders, there's 11 criteria. And two of those over the last 12 months being present in somebody's life would indicate that there's evidence of having a substance use disorder. And these include things like needing more to get the same effect, using despite being in risky situations, craving, trying to cut down unsuccessfully, having the use impact their relationships or their work, using when there's other medical conditions present. So these are all examples. And really, when the alcohol use starts impacting somebody's life meaningfully, such that it then fulfills at least two of these criteria for a mild, four for a moderate, and six for a severe use disorder, that's when we're more concerned about having a substance use disorder, or in this case, an alcohol use disorder, an addiction to alcohol.
Dr. Das, we've talked a lot on our program about the many ways the pandemic affected our lives. Have you seen people in your practice saying that, the pandemic changed their relationship with alcohol in the past few years?
Absolutely. We know that shortly after the pandemic started, 1 in 10 people reported using substances or alcohol to cope. There was an incredible amount of stress associated with the pandemic, and we see it in the headlines that the rates of symptoms of depression and anxiety have also really skyrocketed. And so people are using alcohol to cope, which obviously is not the recommended way to cope with those things. In addition to that, we know that people were at home a lot more, and perhaps what was preventing them from drinking kind of throughout the day was that they were going to work all day. It wasn't uncommon in the middle of the pandemic to be meeting with a patient and being in the middle of the day, and they would kind of sheepishly pick up a glass that they had next to them and say, yeah, I've been drinking since 10 this morning, because they've had access to it since they haven't been in the office. That, combined with the pressure and the anxiety and the stress related to the pandemic, has led to an increase, especially in some groups, including women, have increased their alcohol use and their heavy alcohol use.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about our relationship with alcohol, especially around the holidays, alcohol use disorder, recovery, and how people can be more inclusive in their lives of those who can't drink or don't want to drink. We are speaking with Dr. Smita Das, chair of the American Psychiatric Association's Council on Addiction Psychiatry, and Jeremy Klemanski, president and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, which runs treatment centers around Illinois. And Jeremy, let's talk about reaching out for help. Is there still a stigma around trying to seek help?
Yes, of course. I mean, any time somebody acknowledges a substance use disorder, there's always the risk of judgment from others. There's always a fear that people will not understand the complexity of substance use disorders and that this is a medical condition. There are still some folks that frankly don't fully understand the medical model and the science behind addiction. And so there is always that fear. and people are sometimes still reticent or very concerned about the privacy of how they reach out, where they go for treatment, how frequently they get treatment. We even experience people who are concerned about the name of the organization or what's the signage on the building. That's still a real phenomenon, unfortunately. We haven't, I do think we're making progress in society because we're talking more. We see more coverage in the media about the substance use disorders. And all of those things are good because the more we talk about these things, the more awareness we create, the more we have an opportunity to educate people and break down some stereotypes and stigma.
I wonder if that's, Jeremy, if that's generational or, just has a function of, I'm thinking of like dry January, right? People can now go on social media and sort of promote the fact, hey, I'm not going to drink for a while, which is sort of implicitly acknowledging maybe that drinking too much is a problem or something that, that they were concerned about in themselves. I wonder if you see this changing over time.
I do see attitudes changing over time. And some of it is good and some of it's not so good. We're also seeing increased acceptance, frankly, of the use of some other substances. But over time, people are becoming more educated. In today's society, it's very easy to get information. If you want to understand substance use disorders, you can quickly Google it. Almost everybody carries a device in their pocket where they can find information readily. And so all of those things are leading to increased awareness and understanding. And so I think that's generally positive. And we do see some generational attitude changes with younger folks that we work with.
So Dr. Das, what does treatment actually look like? Let's say somebody does want to go get help. They're concerned about themselves or maybe a family member. What does modern treatment of alcohol use disorder actually look like?
Great question. So the treatment is really specific to what the individual needs. And I think that's really important for people to know is that it's not a cookie cutter treatment and they don't have to feel like, oh, because my uncle did XYZ treatment, it must be the same treatment for me. What I would say is one of the most important things is to try to seek treatment early and to try to explore options earlier. That is a way to ensure that you have so many options available to you. And so whether somebody is just looking to explore their alcohol use or whether they have alcohol use disorder, one of the, meeting several of those criteria that I mentioned earlier, talking to a healthcare professional sooner is always better. Options include the evidence-based treatment modalities that we have in our guidelines that are backed by decades of research. And those are therapy, which generally includes a type of therapy called cognitive behavior therapy with return to use prevention. That's essentially looking at the situations that people tend to use alcohol, the driving reasons behind their use, and then trying to make changes both in their thoughts and their behaviors as they respond to those situations. So that is the main therapy modality. And then there's medications that are really underutilized in this country. Generally, even in large systems where they have great health records, we know that less than 10% of people with an alcohol use disorder get one of these very easy to use medications. An example of this medication is naltrexone. It's a once a day pill that, besides reducing the craving for alcohol, people don't notice much of anything. There's, of course, always side effects associated with any medication, which I would encourage folks to talk to their doctors about. But it's generally well tolerated and an easy to use medication that can really reduce cravings, can reduce number of drinking days and heavy drinking days. So these are options, and it doesn't have to be that everybody needs to quit drinking entirely immediately. I'm always just excited when a patient comes into my office and wants to even explore their alcohol habits. Let's start there and let's see where we can get to.
Jeremy, how can people help others in their lives deal with this at this time of year? And I want to get into some of these practical situations. And I should say we need to take a break in a little more than a minute, but maybe to get us started down that road. Let's say that you see someone at a party getting ribbed or, pressured, maybe gently, maybe not so gently, for not partaking in alcohol. Do you have any practical advice?
Yeah, one of the things you can obviously do is just show your support. and just say to the other person, you know, hey, you know, it's each person's choice what they want to drink. Like, no one's making fun of you for what you're drinking. You know, why are we singling somebody out? It's just not, you know, and that's just really not healthy behavior in general. And so, you know, just sometimes just pointing it out to somebody is sometimes enough. Or also, I mean, sometimes just standing next to somebody and letting them know that you're supportive of them. And that can be encouraging of itself.
All right, let's take a break. We are speaking with Jeremy Klemanski, President and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, and Dr. Smita Das, Chair of the American Psychiatric Association's Council on Addiction Psychiatry. We're talking about alcohol and the holidays. It's a difficult time of year for a lot of people. We're going to continue this conversation when we return. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about our relationship with alcohol, especially around the holidays. And in particular, we're talking about alcoholism or alcohol use disorder, what recovery looks like, and how people can be more inclusive of those in their lives who can't drink or choose not to. Jeremy Klemanski is president and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, which runs drug and alcohol treatment centers throughout Illinois. And Dr. Smita Das is chair of the American Psychiatric Association's Council on Addiction Psychiatry, also practices and is on the faculty at Stanford and earned her MD PhD from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Jeremy, one other message from a listener, Don in Champaign, said, I'm grateful to so many in local and independent businesses, bars and restaurants are adding more and more of a selection of non-alcoholic beers and putting serious effort into craft mocktails. It helps to normalize sobriety and offer an option for all to socialize responsibly. We, on our show, have actually had an entire conversation a few months ago on non-alcoholic bars. But Jeremy, how can someone who's throwing a holiday party or, you know, maybe they're just going to one, be more inclusive of those who don't drink?
You mentioned one of the obvious choices, which is to have a menu and beverages that include a lot of options. And also think about, we like to encourage people to think about how the evening is structured. You know, sometimes people will structure a party or an event, they'll have a section or a portion of the event that's labeled, drinks, And so what we like to say to people is, let's make sure we're focused on everything, the food, the social aspects of the event. Let's make sure that we do as much in terms of the fun and presentation of the non-alcoholic as we do the alcoholic. If you have, for example, bartenders providing your alcoholic beverages, then have people providing and serving the non-alcoholic beverages. Make that as fun and as much a part of the social activity as you would the alcoholic beverages.
One more text from a listener who did not want their name used on air. They said, as a recovering alcoholic, I am almost 1 year sober. I quit cold turkey as of January 1st of this year. It's not been easy. My friends can confirm this is the hardest part of the year for me. For the past 23 years, I've spent a majority of the holidays alone and drinking. Couple this with PTSD from the wars, and you have a perfect recipe for disaster. That was what I was, I should say, you have a perfect recipe for suicide, he says. And that's what he was striving for last year when finally decided to quit drinking altogether. Please tell your listeners to reach out to those friends and family members who isolate during this time of year. It really could make a world of difference. I'll just add, listeners, if you are ever struggling with thoughts of suicide, help is available. 988 is the number to call for that. 988. Dr. Smita Das, talk about how friends and family can best support someone who is getting treatment or trying to get treatment for alcoholism.
Great question. It's something that I talk about a lot. Friends and family basically can do many of the things that we would have them do if anybody has an illness, is be there non-judgmentally, and of course ensure that that the friends and family are also taking care of their own mental health. And so oftentimes a family member may want somebody who's struggling with an alcohol use disorder to meet a certain outcome or a certain endpoint, and realizing that this is something that is a medical condition that does take time, and often we have to take multiple steps to get there. And so being there patiently, non-judgmentally, I love what was just said by the listener about, reaching out and being supportive. Those are all things that are very important. And then of course, taking care of themselves, because for example, we know that 1 in 10 children lives with a parent who has an alcohol use disorder. And so it's very important for, partners and children and family members alike to also get help, because this can be something stressful for an entire family.
I want to say thank you, Dr. Smita Das, Chair of the American Psychiatric Association's Council on Addiction Psychiatry, and also Jeremy Klemanski, President and CEO of the Gateway Foundation. Thank you both so much for being with us to talk about this important topic today on the 21st Show. And a programming note, coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll be listening back to my conversation with Ken Burns and Rosalind LaPierre. Burns, of course, is the noted PBS documentarian. His latest film is The American Buffalo. It's still available on Passport. We're going to listen to that. And then Rosalind LaPierre is a professor at the U of I. She was featured in the film, and I spoke with her at a live event a couple months ago. We're going to re-air those conversations tomorrow. And then Friday, we will be back with a fresh program, sort of looking back at the year in review in both local news stories as well as the biggest stories in state and national politics. That is going to be it for us for new programs for the year. We will be airing best of episodes next week during the holidays. Thank you so much for listening. More to come here on the show in just a moment.